game. Thursday night, and you're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm Chip Gibson, known as the Tree Hugger. I guess I'm going to have to change that. Everybody keeps calling me the Godfather. I can't talk like this, right? So, welcome. It's Thursday night, and we're going to talk kayak fishing. Joining me here in the house, or in the studio, Redfish Chuck. Hey, Chuck, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Fantastic, sir.
Fantastic. It's awesome, man.
Fantastic, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah? Okay. Why are you feeling so good, man?
As I rejoin the workforce, I'm no longer a bum.
That's awesome, dude. Is it fishing related? Is it?
No. I wish. But no, unfortunately.
You'd be like the rest of us now, man. You don't get the dream job.
Well, for the time being.
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Always working on that. So.
All right. Awesome, dude. Awesome. Okay. Also joining us here, the man with the golden voice, is Mr. Becker. Hang on. This is your new song, I think, man.
Goes from Wild Thing to that. That is absolutely the polar opposites of where you can be in
really?
The radio.
Okay, this is a Bring Me
awesome.
Some Cavassier, right? Or we could do this one here.
See, on the first one, I'd have to do my most interesting man in the world imitation.
I know, right?
I don't
it's awesome.
Off.
And let's give a shout-out to the folks in the chat room. We got LGB, friends from Charleston there. Slappy, Eric Harrison is joining us. Hammerhead, Greg Crisp from New Hampshire. Slappy, you're up there in the New England area somewhere. I'm not sure. Sorry, I can't call it out. And Steve Chapman is joining us from Fishing Florida Radio, and we're glad to have everybody on board. So, how you doing tonight, Greg? Mr. Becker?
Me, Greg?
Yeah, Greg.
I very rarely actually hear my name on this show, so...
Right, yeah, it's usually Becker, the man with the golden voice, right?
thanks, Chris, I appreciate that, in the chat room.
You're good, huh?
Yeah, doing as well as can be expected, flying on a single wing.
Yeah.
Looking longingly out the window at a stack of kayaks and water and fish.
Right.
But aside from that, doing okay. Thanks for asking.
You going to get that fixed, man? What's up?
Oh, waiting to hear back from the docs. I mean, I got to go in and have them tell me what's best for me, and then I'll tell them what they're going to do, and we'll negotiate until I win, and we'll go from there.
Okay. You know, I don't trust those guys because they only practice medicine.
That's it. I want somebody who knows what they're doing.
Right?
I'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've gutted a bunch of deer and stuff. I know what the shoulder looks like and all.
That's it.
Could go in there and hook you up. Yeah.
What are friends for, Chip?
Right.
If I can't count on you to take care of something like that, and I know Redfish Chuck would be right there as your scrub nurse.
And I've got my...
Whatever you needed, so...
I'll do it for a case of PBR.
Yeah? Cool. That's pretty cheap, man. That's like new health care.
I know, if I had an HMO, they'd give you a case of Killcliff, but...
In fact, speaking of that, I walked in this evening, and on my doorstep is a case of Killcliff, so...
Outstanding.
Did your data show that?
As a matter of fact, it did.
Awesome.
It did, so we're we're generating some numbers to have some more conversations with them.
Good. Well, here's some numbers for you. You ready for some numbers?
I'm ready for numbers.
Take these down. Where's my new? I got a new spot here. Where did it go? I got a new one. All right. All right. Here's a new one. How's that, right?
You have way too much time on your hands.
I do this all like 5 minutes before the show starts. January to March, the numbers are in, right? First 3 months, first quarter. We still got the Friday night show tomorrow night to end the month out, but I thought I'd jump the gun. January to March of 2011, Kayak Fishing Radio listeners, this is live listeners and downloads of our podcast, was, this is last year's number, 4,294 on this date last year. The numbers for this year, 2012, same time period, January 1st to March 29th, 10,155 total listeners.
And the kids say?
And the kids go wild. Where'd they go? And you just start logging in so you can push the buttons, man.
Yeah, that's better than one of our local AM channel fishing shows, not to be mentioned.
I don't think so.
Wow.
I'm not going to do that. I didn't say that, Steve.
No, I'm not talking about fishing Florida. And Steve knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It wasn't until July 8th of 2011 that we beat that number last year. So, awesome. I thank all my hosts. Chuck on Monday, the Double L crew on Tuesdays, Wheeler on Wednesday, and the guys out west. That's awesome. To date, that's since we've been doing the show here on Blog Talk Radio, December 2010 was our first month on Blog Talk Radio. We have reached 35,900 total listeners. Is that right? That's right. There we go. I just thought that was pretty interesting stuff. I'm a metrics guy. I do it at work, and I bring it home sometimes. So, but that was pretty good.
So what do those numbers say?
What do those numbers say? They say that people like listening to me other than XM radio. I don't know. Maybe it means we need to go to XM radio or something. I don't know.
I think it says that there's an interesting crossover between what 10 years ago most people would have thought were just a bunch of goobers paddling around in plastic boats who had nothing to do with technology or anything else. And now that now we're showing that people who are interested in getting on the radio and talking about fishing and paddling around in little plastic boats are also people who are tech savvy, interested, and engaged in their hobby to the point that they're willing to spend the time and listen to a show and participate. So
listen to it,
that's
yeah.
A good thing all around.
That's cool. And joining us, I know one guy who just joined us in the chat room there has probably listened to every one of the shows, which I tried to go back and do like best of things, and I fall asleep. But Scuba Stan there from Charleston, welcome aboard. And I just found out that Slappy Eric Harrison there in the chat room, he's from Boston Harbor. Sorry. And my pop just showed up in there. Hey, Dad, how are you this evening? So we're doing good. But I think it's pretty cool, man. I think it's interesting that people listen. My wife is completely amazed. She's like, really? You guys talk about the same thing? No, it's a little different. Last week we were talking about top water. This week we're going to talk about something underwater. I don't know. But I think it's cool, man. It's very cool. And Chuck got a new job, so we're happy about that. And the kids are happy, too. Speaking of kids, even call us obsessed. Yeah. That's right. Speaking of kids, I want to talk a little bit about kids fishing, and I'm gonna make a comparison program that I totally support, and actually there's it's a great program, and there's several different programs around the United States. The most predominant of them, which is Heroes on the Water, and there's a chapter there. Down by you, Greg. I know there's one in Jacksonville. There's one here. They're all over the states, and they're awesome programs, and I will completely support them whenever we can. In fact, we sent them a donation from our last boondoggle, and I hope to send them more. But I think we need to do a very similar effort, and maybe it's already happening. Maybe we just don't have to put the effort into it, and I wanted to talk about that tonight. Is how much effort do we need to put into kids fishing? I mean, we kind of started, you know, Chuck's brought it up on his show on Monday, and I know I grew up fishing with my dad and my grandfather, and the clone has been fishing with me ever since he was a little bitty guy, and he's been kayak fishing since he was 9. He's 13 now. And I want to get some more opinions, man. And you're up first in the hot seat there, Mr. Becker.
Okay. Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking.
Okay.
I think part of the challenge that I have, and one of the things that as an avid, rabid, and all those other over-the-top adjectives, fishermen that I consider myself, is that sometimes it's a challenge for me, not so much now, but it was in the past when I was just getting into taking my kids fishing. It was a challenge for me to understand that they fish differently than I do. And if I'm going to take them out with me and teach them to be the next generation of me in terms of people preserving the environment and conserving our resources and doing all that stuff through fishing and engagement in the outdoors, I have to fish the way they want to and the way that holds their interest and do the things that they like to do. And those are, at least they were in the past when they were younger, they're a lot different from the way I fish and the things I want to do. And it took me a while to realize, but for me, basically, when you take the kids out on the water, if you're really engaged in seeing that they have a good time, you might bring a rod, you might cast a line, but you're not there fishing for you. You're there fishing for them in the way you want them to fish. I've seen a lot of kids, you know, standing on a bank or sitting on a bank with a tangled up line while mom or dad is out there, flinging the topwater buzz bait and trying to work around that last lily pad while the kid's sitting there bored out of their gourd and pretty much getting turned off to the idea of sitting on the bank getting eaten by mosquitoes as dad has fun. And I can guarantee you that unless they had some other influence in their fishing career, they weren't going to be the ones taking their kids fishing 15 or 20 years later. That's what we want to generate, and that's what I think we want to focus on. And if we look at the statistics of why, who supports conservation, it's not the government directly. It's not big business, although, you know, we all like to patronize businesses that do their part to take care of our environment. It's the sportsmen. It's the hunters and the fishermen and the trappers and the other folks who are out there buying their licenses, picking up two pieces of garbage every time they go out to leave it cleaner than it was when they got there. And that's what we want to be regenerating if we want there to continue to be an improvement in the level of what we can do and how we can enjoy and share our sport. Here endeth the lesson.
Well said. I agree, and I've got some points to add to that, but I'm going to say hi to Scuba Stan, who's joining us now on the radio or on the phone.
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great, Stan. How are you tonight, buddy?
Good. I had to call in on this subject because it's actually I've thought a lot about this recently. Kind of because it has a lot to do with my grandfather. Some of my favorite memories growing up, one of which was a trip that I went with my grandfather and my uncle up to Great Slave Lake up in the Northwestern Territories of Canada when I was in, it was the summer before my 10th grade. And it was just an amazing experience and a great time to be with my grandfather and some, you know, some pictures and stories that I'll never forget. And now my grandfather is, you know, honestly doesn't have a lot of time left, and trying to spend a little bit of time with him now, and especially allowing my kids to get to spend a little time with him has been real important. And I definitely want to instill the love of fishing into both of them. And actually just the other day, I was able to take my little girl fishing in the same pond that I caught my first fish in at my grandfather's house. And it was, you know, with him present, and it was just an extremely amazing moment. And, you know, this is something that I definitely would like my kids, you know, of course I would love for them to be my little fishing buddies, but it's nothing I want to overpressure them into. And I hope you don't hear my foghorn going off. Pardon me. I don't know if y'all could hear that or not. But, you know, it's just definitely something I want them to be a part of. I want to bring them up to love fishing, to truly enjoy it and, you know, enjoy being outside, but nothing to where they ever feel pressured or, you know, I don't care if we ever catch anything. I typically don't catch anything anyhow. But just like being outside, at least attempting, and then I get to play with gear and tackle and stuff like that.
It's all about the gear, isn't it?
It is. It's all about the gear. Just arranging and rearranging and what's, you know, buying something else and breaking it and then having to replace it.
That's a beautiful
thing. Yeah, it is.
That's just another part of the addiction that we get to pass along to them. You know, just think, son, someday all this will be yours.
You know, yeah. It's cool. You know, speaking of that, I actually was able to get the fishing rod. It was a fly rod. Actually, they just had a bobber and a hook on it that I caught my first fish. I got that recently from my grandfather, and I plan on allowing Tide, my son, for that to be the first rod that he catches his first fish on.
Very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Let me say hi to another fellow broadcaster joining us now live in the studio here, Steve Chapman from Fishing Florida Radio. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
We're awesome, man. Let's hear your kid's story.
You know, it's funny that this is the conversation that's brought up tonight, as today I was asked, for if you ever picked up or Coastal Angler Magazine Orlando,
mm-hmm.
They do a pattern in profile for people. And this month they wanted, coming up next month, they wanted to do me as their thing. And one of the things that they, in the questionnaire, it says, how did you get involved in the outdoors? What happened? And physically, I just was writing down today that, you know, my dad took me fishing when I was 2 years old down in South Florida, and it's what started my passion into the outdoors. From 2 years old till now, you know, I don't fish as much as I'd like to. We're going Cobia fishing tomorrow, by the way. But I don't fish as much as I'd like to now, but I look forward to taking my little son, who's only, you know, is just about to turn two, to introduce him to the outdoors and let him learn everything that I've learned. And it's one of those things that as fathers, and, you know, it's something that we're proud of. We're proud of, you know, you want to teach these kids the best you can do, but keeping them interested in the outdoors is really how you have to do it. And when my sister, I'm sorry if I'm taking too much time, my sister had my nephew Jake, one of the things that I did was when I introduced him to the outdoors, I instantly made sure we went someplace where we could just slaughter trout. I mean, slaughter them. Because if he wasn't interested and I didn't keep his attention, then he wouldn't fish. He would be in my live well trying to train shrimp how to jump over sand, is what he used to say. And it's one of those things you have to, when you're teaching a kid about the outdoors, that you do it. And there's, I don't know if you guys know this, there's great organizations like Fish Florida that if you can put in a grant and say, you know, Kayak Fishing Radio, we want to do a kids fishing festival. They'll donate rods and reels to you, and if as long as you meet their criteria, they give those things to you so you can introduce as many up to 400 kids into the outdoors. It's a great organization.
That sounds freaking sweet. You gotta have a pocket full of patience, and it's worth it. The payoff, I mean, to put patience into something, you expect to pay off, and the payoff is definitely worth it. It's funny you said about playing in the bait well, because when I retired from the Marine Corps in 2001, my son was he was just a little over a year old, and had a 21-foot pro line walk around, and he loved the stinking bait well. In fact, so much that even at about 2.5, there was something really wrong in the laundry room. Really wrong. Like, you could smell it from the front door. And it was because he had pockets full of cigar minnows that we had in the bait well. And he was taking the fish out of the bait well and putting them in his pockets. But little things like that, really fun. Pictures of me and my pop. And my son out on the boat with Red Snapper, you know, as big as his head. And I mean, just the payoff is well worth it. There are some notes that with kayak fishing, when you want to introduce your son or daughter, and this is for all sexes. Kayak fishing is pretty much gender neutral. I know some folks. We're talking about on one of the shows about having a special category for women anglers, but I think it's pretty much gender neutral and it's equal when you're kayak fishing. I know I've been abused by some kayak fishing women that I've got the opportunity and the pleasure to fish with, and Dee Kaminsky, Vicky Sally. And I'm sure that there are plenty more that could wear me out there fishing. So, but
one of your fondest memories, isn't it, Chip?
Oh, they just, you know. The thing is I really enjoy watching people catch fish. I like catching fish, but I really enjoy seeing people catch fish. I really enjoy seeing my kid catch fish too. But, anyways. No, Steve, you're absolutely right. It's really cool. That's a great program there, too. You know, something I think would be really neat, and I saw a few in the past, and I don't know if they're still doing them down there. Remember that I live in Atlanta, so, but I'm a native Floridian. I was born in Hialeah Hospital, so I'm belong down there. I try to get down as much as I can, but are there any summer camps, fishing camps for kids down in Florida? I mean, do they do them anymore?
There's a couple actually down south. Guy Harvey runs one.
Uh-huh.
We were at the West Palm Beach Boat Show last week, and we're doing radio crap, Ola. And we had we sat down and talked to him for some time, and one of the guys, one of his PR people, said, you know, Guy Harvey does. I don't know the name of it. It's in West Palm Beach, but it's what they do is they take kids out. It's a 6-week deal, so for 6 weeks those kids, you know, they come in, they go fishing, they learn everything about the resource of fishing, catch and release, how to do knots, and it's something that most of the kids, what they end up finding out is most of these kids end up doing very, very good throughout high school. They're not in as much trouble as these other kids, and that's one of the positives to getting your kids in the outdoors and having them respect and enjoy the resource that we have, that your kids generally, I'm not trying to say all of them, but a majority of them end up, if they love it that much, they, you know, stick to not doing the things I did when I was their age. They enjoy it. I have one of the things I don't know if you ever heard this story, and if I'm bambling, by all means, I apologize. Have you guys ever heard my story about my nephew Jake and I fishing for barramundi?
No, that sounds fun though.
They have a place. It was called Osceola Outback in Kissimmee. And for years, what they would do is Byron was the only place in the United States where you could go catch barramundi. And majority of the people would get out there and they would go fishing because you didn't have to go to Australia to catch them. You could just go here. And what would happen is everyone would you just go there and you try to catch a world record. Well, for months I used to tell my nephew Jake, we're going to go to this place and catch barramundi and you'll have a great time. So we decide we're going to film the. Sorry if you hear my little boy crying. We're going to film it for a television show we were pitching at the time, and we thought it'd be funny. We'd make it Boudreaux and I against Jake. Boudreaux and I would just do fly fishing, and Jake could use these pellets that they would feed the barramundi. Well, these pellets, you have to imagine, they're about a quarter, maybe a little bigger than a quarter, and they'd be about an inch thick. And really what they were was they were the stinkiest, smelliest catfish crap things you've ever smelt in your life. Well, what Jake would do is he'd hook one on his hook, and then he would create a feeding frenzy. He would take a whole handful of them, throw them into the water, and then as soon as the barramundi would go crazy, he would just drop his hook with this bait on it and catch a barramundi. We did this for about 4 hours. Jake slaughtered the two of us. I mean, he probably caught 30 or 40 fish to the 8 that I caught in the 1 that Boudreaux caught. And every time he'd do it, he'd take his hands and he'd wipe his hands on the back of his ass to get the smell off of them. So as the day's going on, it's just getting worse and worse. I mean, you can smell them I'm like at the other side of the pond. I can smell them. So we get back in the car, and as soon as he gets in the car, I go, "Gee, you're killing me. I've never smelled something so bad in my life." and he says, "Well," and this is something, he calls me Dodo. I know it's a whole other story. But he goes, "Uncle Dodo, I'm sorry." So we start driving back to the house, and I say to him, "Instead of going back to my house, I'm going to drive you straight to your mom, you know, my sister's house. I'm going to drive you straight home because, quite honestly, we've got the windows down. This thing, it's the worst smell you've ever smelled in your life. I mean, it's just horrible. You can barely breathe. I mean, it's that bad." So he pitches a fit with me, and he says, "You know, you told me we'd go swimming, and that's how we did." So I say to him, "Okay, fine. I'll drive back to Apopka, which is like 35 minutes out of the way, and then we'll go swim real fast. But here's what we're going to do. As we get home, I want you to get out of the car, walk into the garage, take your shoes and your socks off instantly. As we walk through the house, I want you to take your shirt off and grab a towel and walk directly through. I don't stop. If you stop, that odor is going to stick with this house for weeks. Don't do it." So as we get to the back door, open the back door, run out the back door, and let's hop in the pool. So we do it perfectly. I mean, we grab everything, we walk out. As soon as we hop in the pool, I see all these floating little pieces of what I think are turd floating to the top of the water. What Jake had done was he had stuffed his pockets full of these baits because he thought that he could bring them back to the house and he would catch more fish with them. They stained the bottom and the side of my pool. My wife almost shot me. He would take them and then he would get on the bottom of the pool and he'd write, "Jake is here on the bottom of the pool with these little turd smelling little bangfish, catfish crap things." And it was disgusting. It took a whole summer to get them off the bottom of the pool. But it's a great story, and it's something I tell the people all the time. And that's one of those, you know, get a kid out there and go fishing. And you know, that's the kind of stuff I've had to deal with.
That's so worth it, man. Yeah. It is definitely worth it. I mean, that's just great, man. Thanks for sharing that one. Oh, man. I'd never heard that before. Let me stay with us, man. Let me say hi to our LGB from Charleston. You're live.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. So you got a kid story for us?
Just sitting here listening to y'all talk, I was thinking back to when I was a kid, and fishing was such a family affair for us. My mom would have the station wagon loaded with the rod and reels and the cane poles and get home from school, head to the lake, and spend the rest of the evening fishing. Mom, dad, my sister, sometimes my grandparents. And so from an early age, I don't have any first recollection of like the first time I fished. I just remembered being able to fish. That's how long I've been fishing.
Cool.
And it was always there to fall back on when I wanted something to do to ease my mind and stuff. So, but I try to pass it on. My my oldest, he enjoys fishing a lot. The youngest one, I'm working on him. But you know, so I'm about to drop the hammer on another kayak. So
there you go, man.
Getting ready.
You can never have too many.
No, you can't. And stuff. So I just wanted to call in and say hello to everybody.
That's great, man. Glad you did. It's good. And those are some of the same kind of memories that I have. You know, I remember the 67 Chevy station wagon and driving down through the Keys and stopping at they used to let you just camp underneath the bridges down in the Keys, and we'd fish off of the catwalks on the bridges and catch snapper, and at night you'd see the big tarpon schooling down underneath the lights and the snook and stuff. And you know, I remember my mom casting over and, you know, reeling back to cast and catching the truck that was going down the highway behind us, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff. So it's those are some interesting you know, just those kind of memories that you have from fishing. And I think Greg brought it up when he was talking, is that you develop that sense of the outdoors. I know when I was teaching, I taught environmental science, and I taught the AP class. So, and I have it was a small class, about 12 kids in there, you know. First of the year, they all come in and sit down, and I'm asking them a little bit of their background, you know, introduce themselves and stuff. And I'm saying, so how many of you have enjoyed camping? And they all look at me like I'm freaking nuts, man. There's wild animals out there in the woods, man. We don't go sleeping in the woods, you know? And I said, well, okay, well, maybe camping's not for everybody. We do live, you know, we're just outside of Atlanta, and it's kind of a metropolitan area. So anybody go fishing, you know? None of them go fishing. And do you even go, like, hiking in the woods? No, I get my shoes dirty. And I'm like, well, then what do you think is going to be, you know, your what are you here to learn about environmental? We want to learn how to save the planet and everything. It's like, you know, to save the planet, you got to go out there and know what the planet's about. And if you don't get out there, you just don't get that respect for it. So,
and a lot of people look at it as a job too.
Yeah.
And they just say, oh, that looks like something I can get into and make some money off on. But I don't know. I knew some guys that they were getting into biology, and because they heard that it was a good paying job. And I was like, well, you know, you like to go outside, and you know, you get mixed comments about that, but I was thinking about that lake. We used to catch the biggest slab crappie, and we would have stringers of crappie. It was just so bad that you would just get tired of cleaning, and you want to give them away. And man, it doesn't seem like you catch fish like that anymore. It seemed like back in the days you'd catch a whole bunch of fish, but now it seems like you can't get into them like you did before.
I'd probably say that maybe the fisheries. I think in some ways the fisheries are a little less than they used to be. Maybe the fish have gotten smarter. I don't know. Maybe they don't eat dough balls anymore. But Randy Vining, river pirate up here in Georgia, we were sitting talking about the same subject one night, and he said, you know, I said, I just don't know. Whatever happened to being able to go out with a cane pole or, you know, in a couple of slices of bread, you know, making dough balls and catching fish all day. And
that's
like,
right.
Well, when was the last time that you did that? You know, I mean, when was the last time that you tried to do it? But I know that I don't see the number of fish. I mean, I remember going out one time with one of the neighbors when I was a kid, my dad and all. We were somewhere in the Everglades, and I mean, the bluegill were just thick, man. I mean, you could just about walk across the water on them. I just remember seeing lots of fish. You know, you'd throw some bread on top of the water and they would just churn it like you were in some kind of fish farm. So, I don't know. The fisheries are probably not as good as they used to be. But then again, I don't know if we fish as simply as we used to. You know, sometimes taking it back a few notches would probably slow yourself down, right?
You mentioned the bread, and my son, Zach, when his first time fishing with me, we went down to the local neighborhood pond, and it was a real thrown-together thing. He was probably, about 3 years old, and I got my Brim Buster out and put a little cork on it, and I took a couple pieces of bread and rolled up some balls, and we caught a few brim, and it was a lot of fun. We used to fish like that. When you couldn't find the worms, you'd go raid some bread, especially the ends. Mom would always give us the ends to use as bait.
So those were the good ones, right?
Man, lots of memories behind that bread.
Yeah. Chuck.
Yo.
So, you got a new kid fishing story for me?
Of course I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. Man, well, let me give you a little history lesson real quick on how I got into fishing, because to me, this is probably, this is set the tone for everything that I have done since I was 2 years old. My grandfather, God rest his soul, used to come and pick me up every Sunday morning. That was our tradition. Didn't matter if it was raining, didn't matter if it was sunny, didn't matter if it was cold, he'd just show up. He'd bring over to the house a dozen bagels for my parents, a dozen chocolate Entenmann donuts for me, and a Sunday paper for the folks.
Got you started on that great physique, right?
Absolutely. Jumped in the truck. I had my little fishing pole with me. Well, you know, he'd get me in the truck. I think the first time I went with him, I was about two.
Yeah.
And we'd go down to the off-track betting, OTB. He'd bet on the horses and let me pick a pretty color that I thought would win. And then we'd go on down to the marina, and we'd sit there, and I'd catch baby bluefish until my arms fell off. We used to call them snapper blues in New York. And just a silver side, frozen silver side minnow and a little bobber, and as fast as you can put it in, you'd catch a little bluefish. Now, flash forward 30 years or so, I'm the proud father of two young boys. My oldest, Trey, is me reincarnated again
as far as his passion for being A, outside, but B, with fishing. The child just eats it up, loves it. You can't mention the word fish in the house, because if you do, he runs and grabs his fishing pole. I mean, it is the most awesome thing I've ever experienced in my entire life.
It's awesome, right?
Yeah. Well, my goal for my son was for him to catch his first fish before I caught my first fish. My first fish I caught after I was 2 years old. So with 4 days left until he turned two, my wife and I did the bread ball routine down at the local pond and caught him a brim, which was his first fish that he reeled in, casted and reeled in by himself on a little 1,000 size Shimano reel, not even being 2 years old, which I thought was pretty awesome. Since then, in fact, I got Trey standing here with me now. I don't think he'll tell you the story because he usually gets flustered when the phone's in front of him. But since then, my almost 3 year old has caught redfish, has caught trout, has caught tarpon, has caught ladyfish, has caught a bass, has caught more brim. I forgot to mention, he caught his tarpon on a fly rod. He caught trout on a fly rod. With assistance from me, of course. But it is the most amazing time for me to spend with him on the water. Like, there's nothing I would ever rather do than spend even just a half hour by the water with Trey, because he just eats it up. And I took him in the kayak. He got his first redfish out of a kayak, and it was a great evening bite. There was tails everywhere, and sure, you mentioned it, you have to have patience, but you know what, at the end of the day, what can I expect, right? Like, he's two. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We're not talking about a six-year-old. We're talking about a two-year-old with the attention span of a squirrel. So,
it gets shorter, though, I think. You know, I mean, the clone is like 13 now, and he still has a short span. But he goes out there and tries, and he likes just being out there.
Yeah. Well, Trey, I mean, the day when we were out there, when he got his first redfish, I called Jess. In fact, it was funny because I called it. I told her, I said, get Trey ready. Find his little life jacket because he's catching his first redfish today. And so I came home, we grabbed her kayak and loaded it up and got him all situated in the truck, drove down to the river, launched. We get out there and there's tails everywhere. It was like the most perfect situation, right? So Trey, not obviously being a proficient caster yet, give him some time, he will be, makes a kind of oblong cast, lands about maybe 15 feet from the kayak, nowhere near any fish. And so I reel it in, I throw it for him, and I hand him the rod, and I'm like, just reel. And he sits there, and he, okay, Daddy, and he reels, and all of a sudden I watch the rod dip just double over, and I said, oh my God, he got one. And I freaked out, like, I get goosebumps thinking about it, because it was such a defining moment for me, you know, being a dad, enjoying the time on the water with my son, the way that my grandfather did with me, the way that my dad has done with me, and still goes with me, my father does. And it's just absolutely incredible. My dad wants my boys to enjoy the outdoors so much that this year for Trey's birthday, they're buying him the lifetime sportsman's license for Florida.
Yeah.
So he'll never have to purchase a hunting, fishing, spearfishing, lobstering, any kind of permit for the rest of his life.
Yeah, Clone's got one.
Yeah, so super excited about that, man. But no, and I'm with Steve. I really, with Kayaks by Bow opening up here in Titusville, being local to me, and there being so many kids that fish in this area, I'd really like to get involved with some sort of a kids fishing day, or even just seminars for kids, and make it really fun and really, you know, exciting, and put together prize packs where all those kids go home with stuff. It's just
face it, man, it's the future of our sport. And, you know, I mean, I can tell you, I've got a lot of friends that went the wrong path throughout life. I've got, I'm not proud to say it, but I've got a very close personal friend of mine who's sitting on death row right now. And he made the wrong decisions in life and got away from the beauty of the outdoors. And you know, when I was a kid, I didn't have time to get in trouble. All I had time for was fishing. I didn't have time even to go to school dances. I had time to go fishing. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for that. You know, you get kids involved in the outdoors, and they don't have to be, I don't know, you don't have to shove it down their throat to the point to where now they're annoyed with it and they don't want anything to do with it. That's the wrong way to do it. But you can get them involved with it in some form of capacity, whether it's just even walking on a beach or going on a birding trail or whatever, and build memories that way. And, I mean, I don't know. I've camped in every state on the Eastern Seaboard I've camped on, and most states within a state inside of that, if that makes sense. I've camped in a lot of states growing up, and I don't know. I attribute that to the man that I am today. You know, I don't think I would be who I am today if it wasn't for the time my grandfather and my father spent with me on the water, and not just that, but as it was said earlier, teaching me to respect it for what it is. It's a resource, and we have to respect it. You know, but
yep.
I'm off my soapbox. That's all I have.
Oh, that's cool, man. And I'm with you on this. So you think about this. Here's a bug, right? Put in your ear, Captain Mike, Steve, you guys. So you got Kayaks by Bo starting up, right? That's a great. It looks like a great place, man. His last post of his picture is awesome. But you got a great fishery in Florida. You have go up a step now. You know, you get professional fishermen. I don't know if I thought it was interesting. I read Iaconelli's book and read a couple other books by some big fishermen guys. You know, I mean, it's not just, you know, dolts out there fishing, right, competitively. They have it in the universities now. I know Auburn, Louisiana, they all have fishing teams. And I think I even saw them now. They're competing not only in freshwater, but also in the IFA-type format, you know, redfish competitions. How cool would it be if, you know, because you can't really do bass boats and stuff at the high school level, but how cool would it be as a stepping stone, you know, to have kayak fishing competitions at the high school level, you know? And I mean,
it would be killer.
And you can even do it at, you know, you could even go to the middle school. I mean, the clone's in seventh grade. And, I mean, those kids, you know, you could do it. You don't even need a big, giant body of water. You don't have to be in Florida. You could be in some town that's got a little pond or a little lake, put a few kayaks on there, you know, mini X's or little the Tarpon 100s and stuff like that, and get the guys out there, you know, high school competition and stuff. How cool would that be? And now you've got the kids interested in something. You get them involved. You get them involved in the environmental aspect of it, understanding a fishery. You know, when you fish, you understand what it takes, you know, for that fishery to be there, and, you know, all of the interactions and stuff. So I don't know. Or, you know, a kayak fishing camp for kids in the summer, you know, have them, you know, if you got a place for them to camp and a few days on the water, someplace like the lagoon or something where, you know, it's pretty benign as far, it's not, you know, it's not real hazardous. I mean, I wouldn't take them down to the south end where the big giant gators are, but, you know, I think it could be done. I think it could be thought out, and it's something that I've been thinking about. And like I said, don't get me wrong, don't break up the sound bites and say, you know, I think we spend too much time on other efforts, but I think there's a lot of time already spent teaching kids how to fish. But I think there's some other, you know, underserved areas that, you know, kids aren't getting the picture. Kids maybe don't have the opportunity to try fishing. So I don't know. That's my soapbox.
No, I like it, man. I think it's a great idea. I'll tell you from have had the opportunity to work in the taco shops I've worked in, you would be amazed, honestly, for Central Florida area, for the number of kids whose parents have bought them boats before they have even owned cars. And, like, flats boats, like $30,000 flats boats. And some of these kids are literally, like, almost as well-versed in fishing as most grown adults. They know the, they know all the different knots, they know the lures, they know the rigs, they know the... But I'm with you 110%. I think that a high school level, even a junior high school level, then into a high school level, fishing teams per school, I don't think you're looking at much of an investment, at, if anything, from the school level. I think there's more money spent on football and basketball and track and everything else, you know, with the travel and everything else as well. And quite frankly, down here, the AAU sports, thank God I'm not to that age yet with my boys, but my brother takes my my nephew all across the entire state for ice hockey, I mean, and lacrosse, and the kid's like 12. So I think that that's actually a really good idea, Chip. I don't know if Steve's still on the line, but I'd be interested to look into it a little bit and see if there's something we couldn't do down here to maybe try and get at least just a couple schools involved, you know. And
you're gonna have
I'd
to
go out on a.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd go out on a limb and say that I'd be willing to try and help to organize something for that. And if nothing else, I'd love to be a mentor or even a coach to one of the schools or something like that. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, we had a. It was kind of short-lived at the high school I was at, but we had there was a place next door to the high school. There was a pond, and we had a few kids that were interested in it, and we couldn't get anyone else in the school system, you know, to want to compete against us, or at least, you know, to try to get up enough interest. But as we got started, you know, we had a little fishing club, and we'd go out there, you know, and one evening I brought out, you know, a couple of the rods that I had built, and I showed the kids, you know, you can build a rod like this, you know, you can do this. Taught them how to build, you know, how to, you know, spine a rod and put a handle on it. And we had a couple of kids, you know, over the course of the year, we all, you know, come in the afternoons and we'd sit in the classroom and build the rod, you know, and work on them. So there's all that kind of stuff too. So not that you're going to make a lot of money out of it, but if a kid's fishing, you know he's not in trouble, right? I mean, so you're being pretty quiet there, Mr. Becker.
No, I'm just listening and soaking it all in. You know, everybody's as I'm hearing the other stories, every one of them took me back to some time in the past where I was either, you know, the little kid fishing or fishing with my kids, or a lot of times my kids and somebody else's kid that they wanted to take fishing that had never been before. And I think that's one of the that was one of the neatest things for me to see is for my kids to turn around and want to extend that knowledge and that experience to other kids and say, you know, gee, can we take Johnny fishing with us today? And there really wasn't Johnny. He's not apocryphal. But wow, that was a big word, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You lost me.
Yeah, that's okay. He's not made up.
Thanks, buddy.
No problem, pal. To see that is and really see the passing on, they're willing to pass that on to other folks is pretty cool. You know, I've been thinking about it. I don't remember. I can remember things when I was 2 years old. Not many, admittedly, but I remember some stuff that happened when I was two. And I never, ever remember a time in my life when I didn't know about fishing and I didn't fish and I didn't like to go out and catch fish. It's just been it's an ingrained part of who I am. And I get to thank my dad for that. And I'm hoping that, you know, that someday that my kids feel the same way and they can turn around and say, you know, and pass that on to their kids and to other people. So that's a pretty cool thing to do.
Yeah. Well, it's a great subject. And I mean, the time has just flown by. We're pushing our hour here. And I know I see some folks have already headed out to get their beauty sleep, and I'm one that needs it. So I appreciate everybody joining in. Steve, for calling in, giving us your story. Stan, I know he'll listen to the rest of the podcast later. LGB, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for your story.
You're welcome.
And Chuck, you're gonna kick it off for us on Monday night.
Yeah, man. May possibly have a special guest caller. Steve's trying to dial that in for me.
We're
still trying to get the Swamp Brothers in there. So
he gave me a little heads up there. So look forward to that. All right, and so appreciate it. We're going to call it an evening. Before we do, we'll do the little
boondoggle, boondoggle, boondoggle. What the heck's a boondoggle? Check out yachtangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource.
That's not Mr. Becker's voice, anyways. But
Yachtangler.
Yeah,
I can pronounce Jack.
Yeah.
Check out yachtangler.com. Yachtangler.
But boondoggles coming up. We're looking at 5 to 8 October, Columbus Day weekend, Virginia Beach, First Landing State Park. Check it out, yakangler.com/boondoggle or kayakfishingradio.com/boondoggle. Get you both to the same place. Join us. It's fun. I mean, it's just like a bunch of kids getting together to go fishing. No stress, no tournament formats, just a good time, and we're going to be up there, and I think we're going to catch some flounder, right, Chuck?
Yeah, flounders.
So they got cabins, they got campgrounds. It should be fun. I'm also still looking for three. I have three spots for a mothership trip on Memorial Day weekend out of Darien, Georgia. That's just a little bit north of Brunswick, Georgia, which is just a little bit north of Jacksonville, Florida. But it's a 42-foot trawler that's been it was a shrimp boat converted to a mothership to take kayak anglers out into the backwaters in some pretty secluded spaces. So we're going to do that Memorial Day weekend. It'll be a Friday afternoon launch, Saturday and Sunday gunkoling and looking for fish, and return to port on Monday afternoon. If you're interested, drop me a line at kayakfishingradio@gmail.com, and I'll give you the particulars. We have three spots left available for that. So if you're interested, give me a holler. It's on the Captain Gabby, and you can check that boat out at captaingabby.com. Looks to be a pretty good time. Right now it's myself, the clone, and Yak Sushi from yakangler.com. So I appreciate everybody for being here tonight, and we're going to call it an evening. Check us out tomorrow night. You got the guys out west, Isaac and Dennis Spike for Fishing the Wild West, and then Chuck will start it all over again on Monday. So, Mr. Becker, thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Yeah, have a good one. Best to your family. Mr. Brownlee, LGB, thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
Giggity.
And Chuck, we'll see you on Monday.
See ya.
All right. Good night, everybody in the chat room. Good night. Drop me a line. We'll see you next week.